Hey, welcome to the Weed Out, where we talk about the nonsense and the bullshit happening in our backyard. I'm Spencer Fox Peterson today, flying solo. Joanna couldn't make it in. She had some work stuff going on, but the show must go on, and it will. And we took a week off last week. So if anybody was wondering what happened, we just took a week off. We do that and, recharge our batteries. So this week we are back, which is the first week of February. We're recording this on Monday, February 5th. 2024, the year of our Lord, and it's going to be a crazy year. So new governments just got sat. The shoestring in the local publication nearby has started doing podcasts. I actually did an episode talking about the new city governments in Greenfield, Holyoke, and Northampton, which was full with lots of drama, which I'm sure I'll allude to throughout this episode. But today, instead of talking about the Connecticut River Valley, we're going to reach out to our Berkshire friend, multiple time guest. I think he has the record for multiple guest appearances on the Weed Out. He has claims that he has heard every episode of the Weed Out. So we thank the following: Michael Hitchcock, from Roots and Dreams and Mustard Seeds out of Pittsfield, Massachusetts, is back on the show. So thanks for coming back on, Michael. How are you today?
Pretty good, a little feverish.
Well, we're on Zoom, everybody. So we're being COVID and health conscious. We are social distanced and the pandemic is going on. So public service announcement, please mask up, not only for your own safety and the safety of your community, also because the NSA wants to see your face. So, don't give them the satisfaction, but also for COVID and flu and all the things. So right now we are recording in our separate locations, but Michael is a trooper and we appreciate you coming on despite not feeling great. So sorry to hear that, but I'm glad you're here.
Thank you. Last night I had an in-person meeting and I wore an N95 mask and a little blue mask over it to hold it on nice and tight. And people thought it was a little bit weird, but it was nice to remind people to be responsible.
And
I
look,
know that.
regardless, now you still feel kind of crappy today. And it's like you probably caught the bug some other time, probably not last night, but you possibly prevented spreading that bug to everybody else by masking up. Because you never know
That's why
if
I
you're
wore
carrying
it.
it.
Yeah.
You never know if you're carrying something. And it doesn't have to be COVID, it could be anything. And if we're in crowded areas without great ventilation, regardless of what the government says, we got to keep ourselves safe. So like I was saying, alluding to earlier in the episode, new governments have been sat locally. There was elections last fall. New governments were sworn in this January mostly. So like I said, Greenfield, Northampton, and Holyoke. So can you tell us what's going on out in Pittsfield? They've had a lot of shakeups the last, year and a half.
The biggest shakeup is the new mayor, and we do not yet know, excuse me, what to think about him
Who is
because
there?
it's Peter Marchetti. He was the longtime council president, pillar of the community, vice president of a bank, like man about town. He actually came to one of our events the other night. So he is like a. He wants to be liked by the people. He's soft on the people, but he ran on this anti-homeless policy that he was going to make it illegal to stand in one place for longer than 10 minutes. So we're not sure. And when Miguel Estrella was murdered, he was really vigorously defending everybody's time limits, not defending, enforcing everybody's time limits, making sure that you don't say bullshit or fuck or anything like that, and that you stick to 3 minutes. So he's a bit of a civility hawk liberal, and he did run on the promise of just cracking down on the homeless. So that gives me pause, even though he's a nice guy who wants to be liked. So we don't know what to think of him yet. It's a little too early.
Seems like a common refrain in local city governments. Holyoke definitely has their characters that fit something similar. Obviously, not exactly analogous, but there that is like a thing. Of they'll be willing to hear you, but you got to do it right. And then there's people that just want to brush you off, and then there's people that really genuinely want to hear you. But the ones that tend to get to these positions of the executive position, where there's only one of them, tend to be truly the worst kind of down the middle. Both sides are important.
yeah.
And come on, loitering laws for everybody. There's a long history of loitering laws in the United States, and they're bullshit and, you know, super subjective, and they go back to Jim Crow segregation code type stuff. So, yeah, weird to hear loitering laws being referenced in the year 2024.
Yeah. And he, it's almost certain that there will be a lawsuit against the city of Pittsfield if he follows through with his campaign promise, because it's not really something. It's almost like a settled legal question that you can't mess with people that way.
Yeah, well, I mean, who knows? The Supreme Court that currently sits at the top of the government has done some weird things. So, I mean, recently, 5-4, Biden won a case about who gets to enforce the border, which, because of the supremacy clause, it really should have been 9-0, not 5-4. So there's four justices that think that Texas has the right to supersede the federal government, which is like explicitly stated. And I thought they were originalists. So who knows? But yeah, this loitering thing, I mean, like I said 2 minutes ago, this is one of the first civil rights things I learned about as a young boy in the 90s. Like, people have been fighting loitering laws forever. This is crazy. You know, what do you get where you can't keep us moving? That's weird.
Yeah.
And it's not reasonable. It's not like the government can't really, really enforce that. Like, think about how much money it would cost to enforce those laws. Like, so it's just, yeah, they're hurtful, awful laws that can't actually fully, truly be implemented. It's kind of akin to like drug use laws. Like, okay, but we know people are doing drugs inside their homes, so why don't you just say, please, no public drug use? And the homeless people, well, let's give them fucking homes so they can do drugs behind closed doors. Because that's really what people are upset about, in my opinion. They don't want to see the same shit people do at their homes. They don't want to see it on their way to work.
That's right.
You know, public.
There's a lot of wrinkles about this. Like, okay, it's illegal to stay in one place for 10 minutes. So are you going to have enforcement with a counting clock? And if I leave in 9 minutes and 45 seconds, we're good. And how far do I have to walk to constitute leaving? There's like so many stupid wrinkles of enforcement. It's just going to lead to a bunch of malicious compliance, civil disobedience, which I plan on doing if he followed through with it, isn't like attacking the law directly.
Oh, absolutely. Lord knows if I would be maliciously compliant about it, I'm sure a lot of people would. Again, like some of these laws that the fascists in historically try to like put in, it's like you can't even enforce this. Like, what are you even doing? But you know, that's the whole point, is to get us mired in these discussions that don't really matter. And now we're not talking about how to solve the issue at hand, which is people being unhoused. And Pittsfield, just like I'm sure down here lower in the valley, has the same homeless crisis happening. Houseless, unhoused crisis, because it's not their fault they're unhoused. It's the system. Like, that's why I try to stay away from saying homelessness. It's an old tick, but unhoused, you know, like it's a choice to not let us all have housing.
Yeah. Well, so we deal with a lot of people who actually, they call themselves homeless, so we don't bother them about the term, but I understand not wanting to use the term.
Oh, I don't police people on any language personally anymore. Like, I it's it's a fucking waste of time. I can only control what I can do, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and I've heard this similar thing about disabled people, and they don't like the word differently abled. And I've heard that from you know, disability activists, and they're like, yeah, no, it's just telling the truth. I am disabled.
Yes, exactly.
So I kind of understand that. And if a houseless person, unhoused person wanted to say I'm homeless, that's fine too. Like, I don't really give a shit. But if I can try to avoid it and try to use the correct tense of how the action happened, it's kind of like enslaved versus slave. You know, when you're enslaved, that's not a choice, you know, whereas slave is kind of more neutral sounding. Sounds like
it yeah.
made a choice at some point, where enslaved is an action. And I think that's really important when we're talking about these things. But again, it's not worth. Anyways, it's not worth getting into the PC. Is this PC or not? You know, it's like I personally try to stumble over those words myself, and it's hard.
Yeah, I just always feel in certain circles I have to disclaim why I'm saying homeless or Latino instead of these other preferred terms. I have to, in certain circles, not with you. I feel like this ultimate compulsion to say I'm following the lead of the people I'm talking about. That's who self-refer.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. So if, you know, like there's been discussion over the years I've seen discussed all over the internet, like African-American or Black-American. Like, so I just get like you said, if whoever I'm talking to, I take in context, and if that's what they use, I kind of take their lead, you know, like respect the person you're talking directly to, you know?
You got it. So here's this other thing about the election that I wanted to mention.
Oh, but that everybody that was civility politics done well. We discussed
something. Oh yeah,
you know that civility belongs, but like to say like I want to commit a genocide in nice language to me is civil, but that's what they mean when they say let's have civil discourse down at City Hall. They don't care if you talk about killing off the homeless people. They're just like, just don't say the F word. Where I'm like, wait, what? Why is this even a debate? That's not civil. Sorry.
No, you're absolutely right. And they also want to make sure that you have body disposal covered so that you're not leaving a mess. That those are the two things, is be civil and don't leave a mess. That's when you don't cross them. But
sorry to catch you off.
No, this whole thing, this election, it follows a similar 30,000 eligible voters over here in Pittsfield. So guess how many people ultimately voted for Marchetti out of this 30,000?
16,000.
No, that would be even better. 5,800.
Okay.
So that's like one out of six voters. And for him and for the liberals who support him, he got 60% of the vote. So for everybody, they can say that's a mandate to rule. That's a very strong mandate, 60% of the vote. But in reality, he only got 5,800 votes out of 30,000. Most people just simply didn't show up. And unfortunately, I understand why people don't vote. And I get that it's a system that's unresponsive and that it seems like a waste of time. But ultimately, because people didn't vote, he gets to pretend that what he does is supported by a majority of the voters. Because technically, once they don't vote, they're not counted. So technically he is supported by 60% of the voters, even though it's really more like 20%.
And this is where Joanna would chime in, being the resident analyst, somebody that does this for a living. She said, this is how stats can be deceptive. And then the other side to say like, well, it's not the community's fault. The whole community didn't vote. Yeah, there is an argument to even pointing out that statistic, that how many people didn't show up to vote. Like, yeah, I mean, I guess you really can't complain if nobody showed up. My issue with all these fucking arguments, and this is where I like, I think my little special brain has always been troubled since a little boy, regardless of what, how much you won by or what your position is, how is doing harm to people even on the table?
Yeah.
Why are those, why aren't those ideas automatically discarded by these leaders, you know? And that to me, it's like, I've always been so confused and upset by that. But, you know, the reality is they get to say, I got 60% of the people who actually showed up to vote. So my way goes.
Yeah. So let's clean up the homeless.
Yeah. Whatever the fuck that means.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. So me and my wife over here at Roots and Dreams and Mustard Seeds, if we talk about solving homelessness or fixing the homeless problem, whatever, we are talking explicitly about giving people places to live. But other people, when they talk about solving the homelessness problem, they could mean any number of ultimately cruel things that result in harm, over enforcement of bullshit laws, or even worse, brutalization.
So amid all this, who took his position in Pittsfield as the president of the council?
Well, that's what's crazy. Once he said it, everybody fell behind, and it became so this, like this border dispute with Texas is like a contest of which way to be cruel to immigrants. Like Texas is saying, hey, we've got to do razor wire and slice them up. And Biden says, no, cut that razor wire down. We need to get in there to destroy the water caches so that they die in the desert crossing. And that, you know, it's like a contest of how to be mean to migrants in the correct way. And here, the whole race became about how are we going to be mean to the homeless? Like Marchetti, really, he found a hot button. We have a lot of local business owners I won't name who they really like to complain about how the homeless hurt their business.
They even anybody at home listening that's in the Pittsfield area, the reason we don't even have to name names is because they let us know who they are very loudly, usually. I mean, whether it's on Facebook or a public comment or letters to the government, like, so if you want, if you're curious, if you're nosy little Betty's, just go to Facebook. I'm sure you'll find them.
Yeah. And then I get to maintain my air of public neutrality by not having named them.
Well, we don't have to. You don't name Voldemort. There's no need to name these little petit bourgeois losers.
But we explicitly will not be pushing the homeless off. With, you know, we had a guy sleeping in our doorway of our food pantry before we moved it. And we're just not. I had to get in there and I just said, pardon me, Brett, you know, refer to him by first name because I know who he is. Sorry, Brett. I just got to get in here for a moment. And he's just laying on the ground. Really in a horrible condition, but I don't have much more I could do for him. And he asked me for some food. I said, oh, sure, I could do that. Well, before I leave. And I just can't imagine looking at a man laying on the ground. It's cold. It's unpleasant. It's hard. And looking at him and saying, you know what? He's not suffering enough. I gotta ratchet up this suffering somehow. I can't imagine doing that. I understand feeling powerlessness in the face of such a large issue and you don't know how to help someone. And the issue is too large for one person's help to fix it. I get all that. But the idea that people would want to add to the suffering, that is unthinkable to me.
So I had an interaction in the last couple of weeks that I think I should share with you in the audience. I was talking to some colleagues, we'll call them, like, I won't tell you where I was or what I was doing, but very genuine conversation. Like somebody was basically like, there were three of us, so there was a triangle of points of view, which was actually kind of nice. One guy was just like, yeah, man, like, it's so cold. I don't know how these dudes, like, do it. Like, he saw somebody driving him to where he was going that day. And the other guy was like, shit, yeah, man. And this other guy, the second guy, had spent time in prison, right? And I said, you know what they're trying to do right now? There's actual, like, law, legal cases going to the Supreme Court to, like, criminalize being houseless and going to jail. And the guy who had spent time in prison in his life, you know, I think he said 3 years, to give you some context, he said, oh, well, at least they have a place to live.
Yeah.
And I was just like, and the other guy that was like just talking about the humanity of the, like, oh man, I can't even imagine. Like, I'm fucking annoyed how cold I am. And I have everything. And then this guy was just like so callous, and like, because he's an American, we grew up just doing this shit. Like, some people go to jail, I guess, like, including I've been one of them. Like, he didn't really seem very plussed about it. And I was just like, I was like, guys, no, that's really fucked up. Because what if you all of a sudden become homeless, then you go to jail? Like, what? Like, that's fucking crazy. Nobody's going to put you in a house. They're going to put you in a cage. And, you know, the first guy who brought it up was very, like, shook. Like seeing the reality of, like, wow, that could happen. And I was like, yeah, it's fucking scary. And then the other guy, when I just reminded him, I was like, yo, prison sucks. Why would you? He was like, yeah, you're right. Like he kind of snapped out of it, you know? And he's like, yeah, that is fucked up. Anybody could be homeless, you know? And I think in his mind, it's like, well, I was, I fucked around and I went to jail. Like, I did something that was wrong, you know? So I think maybe that was his idea of it. And I was like, yeah, I mean, it's wrong to be fucking homeless. It happens. Like, the place you work at goes under for not having, because somebody embezzled or something out of your control. Anything, you know, the you can't get the product to process into the thing you sell. Like, you're out on your job and you got a mortgage payment you can't pay. It can happen to anybody.
Yeah, and it doesn't take that long.
No, not at all. But so, everybody at home, sorry to like throw all that heavy shit. Homelessness is crazy and it's getting worse. It's actually worse than it was in the Great Depression, just to give everybody context. It went up 12% last year.
Yeah, and I want to throw in something here. The way homelessness is measured, what you're missing, we're dealing with, we have one family who's living 15 people in a two-bedroom apartment. We have three people living in a car that can sometimes sleep inside and have access to a shower. And there's a very difficult number to count that is much, much higher of people that are in a gray area of near homelessness, such as the two conditions that I mentioned. A lot of people in overcrowded, overpriced apartments where it's just inhumane living conditions. And these people are not counted in the homeless statistics. So it's much, much worse than even the numbers, which sound bad. It's much, much worse than that.
And even more insult to injury, how they calculate the raw number when they say there's 460,000 homeless people. A number of homeless people is very arbitrary. There's like one day that a city rep goes out and counts the amount he can see and reports it to whatever federal agency. Sorry, I can't remember all the details of that, but basically it's super inaccurate how they even get the raw number.
Yeah.
And it's probably far worse. And, you know, I mean, homelessness is transient a lot too. So like, once you've kind of burned your bridges locally because you have stolen from enough places and you're kind of got to move on, or whatever you're doing to survive, or burn bridges, whatever that means. I mean, every given day is going to be different people, you know?
Also dealt with people, you know, being in the food pantry, it's important. And I think I've mentioned it before. If you're in my organization, you can't just be behind closed doors doing spreadsheets or whatever. You actually have to spend some time on the ground. So working these pantry hours and being like a respectful human being without condescension or anything, you know, just like greeting people by name is so important, because you hear these stories. Once people feel comfortable, which we get reports over and over again that we're the only drop-in center where people feel actually like respected, where they could just be themselves, and be treated with dignity. You hear these stories. So we got quite a few people in the last few weeks telling us, like, one lady's homeless because her rent went, her landlord put in granite countertops and then increased the rent from $700 to $1,350. And she said it in a way that I did get a belly laugh out of it, except it's so tragic. But literally, that's the only improvement he made was granite countertops. And for him, he thought that was worth $650 extra a month. And she couldn't do it, so she's out on the street. And she's actually crying, except when she was making that joke, which made her laugh too. She is actually crying because she's never been homeless. She doesn't know what to do or who to go to. And she's already in the process of burning her bridges with other people who are living marginal existences who can barely afford to help her. So you go couch surf with someone and lean on them for a week or two. And we're all living at really high margins of our income. So there's a limited amount of time we could take someone in, and you start to burn your social bridges. So I'm watching a couple people start circling that particular drain, and I'm a little bit helpless to do anything about it. They've just closed our homeless shelter in Pittsfield, reopened another one that holds 20 fewer people. So it's like just a huge issue that's being exacerbated by really dumb and cruel decisions.
And, you know, this is the standard point where I'll point out also prisons make money, and we pay the bill. It would be cheaper to it would be way cheaper if you want to talk about fiscal conservatism. Fucking give people housing, boom. God damn.
Yeah.
The prison bill goes down. All the things that we pay a lot of money for go way down. You know, all property damage, all that stuff. So it's crazy. It's annoying. It should be. And you're right. It's just stupidity. And I say it's greed. And some people, it's cruelty is the point, unfortunately. So how can people help? I don't know. Whether it's with Roots and Dreams and Mustard Seeds in Pittsfield, or just, do you have any general mutual aid organizing tips you can share with our audience? I'm kind of going to leave that to you to decide.
Yeah. So one thing, if you want to take it on yourself to help homeless people, I'm thinking of this one lady in particular. She has the same accent as I do, but when she talks to homeless people, she kind of puts on an accent like, "How are you, dear?" And it's so insulting. It's so dehumanizing, but they're hungry. They don't give a shit. You know, they're not going to tell her to quit it. But if you actually want to help a homeless person, at least treat them like a person. Introduce yourself the way you would to anybody. And don't give them what you think they need. Ask them what they need and give them that. And usually it's just money. People know how to spend money better than you for themselves. And think about it. If they do spend it on drugs or alcohol, imagine what you would do to escape those situations. So that's on the individual level, which is where most people function, because there's not a lot of structural societal ways to respond to this problem. Because structurally and societally, we actually use homeless people as kind of a threat for the working poor, because we can always be replaced. You know, I can always hire a homeless guy for less, is something I've actually heard on a work crew. And the one time I did line up on a city corner in a Home Depot truck with 30 desperate people trying to get a job for the day doing demolition, that was like half of us were homeless on that thing. So the homelessness is treated like that. It's kind of a reserve labor pool to threaten the working poor. That's its function. So that's why there are a lot of societal broad solutions for it, because it actually serves the economic system as is. However, something we're working on with our new building, we have enough equity to create some 24 units of cooperatively owned housing where people could just own their own section of the apartment building. But that, even though that's awesome, is insufficient to the problem. We actually would need either to be a popular model for that so other people do it, or we need to just do it again after we do this first one. Beyond that, you can go, food pantries all serve the homeless population, and any food pantry that's a member of Western Mass Food Bank is listed on their website. So you can go to the Western Mass Food Bank website. They have a list of all the pantries associated with them, and you can go contact those pantries and ask about volunteer hours. And that is a way you can have some impact on an established program where homeless people already know to go. However, that's charity. And charity is forever. It does not threaten the structural component of homelessness. It would just help keep homeless people fed, which is important. So I don't have much in the way of structural things to send people to. Hopefully, when we create our cooperative buildings and we get some people into transitional housing with no curfews, no drug testing, no job requirement, and just get them a dignified place to stay, hopefully that becomes a trendy thing other people try. But until then, I guess we are stuck on that individual charitable level of helping people in a dignified way.
And everybody listening at home, feel free to reach out to us at theweedout@gmail.com. If you have any questions regarding this, Joanne and I will definitely help you find resources, whatever you're specifically thinking about. We've done this for other people. You know, depends on where you are. We'll help you research it. So we're not that's a service we can offer. Please, if this is something that you're inspired by, it's a noble cause and everybody deserves a house. And so please, Michael, tell us what is coming up for Roots and Dreams and Mustard Seeds, how people can get involved, and what you guys may need.
Thank you. So we just moved into our community building that we own, and it's the whole block encompassing the old King Cone all the way up to Remrock's Fried Chicken. That whole building now belongs to us, and we've moved in. You can follow us at rootsanddreamsandmustardseeds.com or follow us on Facebook, which is pretty active. And you can see we've just got a ton of stuff going on. But basically, all of our highfalutin dreams of what we're trying to do, we're just being inundated by the blunt material needs of the people around us. So we're ending up doing like food, places to stay, homes, clothing. You know, we're really being just hit with just the absolute need people are in, people are suffering. And so we're always taking donations on that front, but people feel more comfortable about donations if they just come by and see how we're running. So if you come down to 119 Fenn Street and just walk in, you're going to be greeted like a human being. And we're not going to know whether you're homeless or affluent, because we're just going to say, oh, here's a person. Welcome. How are you? And then you can think about if you want to donate to support this cause here. This summer, we are reopening King Cone under our ownership, which our ownership means we are going to be training the workers to own it themselves, which is going to take about a year. So if you want to support something like that, just follow us, because there is going to be investment and merchandise opportunities coming pretty soon. Donations or investments or buying merchandise. And we just have like an amazing number of projects going on that would have precluded us talking about anything else. I could have just given you a dry 40 minutes on everything we're doing. So yeah, please follow us on the Facebook. You can see all the pictures, see what we're doing. Check out our website. It's very friendly. It's I'm told it resembles a Pinterest. Roots and Dreams and Mustard Seeds.com or Roots and Dreams and Mustard Seeds on Facebook. Yeah, and if anyone ever has any specific questions just for me, I don't mind an email at michael@rootsanddreamsandmustardseeds.com.
Thank you very much for sharing all that information. We'll make sure in the show notes. So anybody, if you missed it, you can just go to our show notes at www.theweedout.com. And that's where we have all our links to all our social media, or you can go to just one of our social media accounts. There's a link tree in our bio, all the links relevant to anything on the podcast, like getting to the show notes, you can go through there. So I appreciate everybody listening. Appreciate Michael for organizing within his community. And this is in Pittsfield, Roots and Dreams and Mustard Seeds. And you said it was
119
Fenn Street in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. So check them out. And at the very least, maybe you're thinking of doing something similar. You don't live near Pittsfield, but you want something, a community driven space owned by the community. You know, and look around you. There's plenty of examples around you to inspire. Yeah.
I am 100% on board with people picking my brain when they want to do some kind of project. That's like part of my mission and part of my job.
Yeah, no gatekeeping here. No paywalls. So everybody, I just want to, behalf of the Weed Out, coming back on, and thank you for being an active member of your community. It's not just about electing politicians. Like, we briefly spoke about the new mayor in town, and you know, we could get into all the drama of every local government every episode. Maybe in the future, the Weed Out, when we do more content, that would be something we do. And we'd love to have somebody like Michael on to talk more in depth about ongoings in Pittsfield politics. But as you can see, the story sounds familiar in Pittsfield as it does in Holyoke and Northampton and Greenfield. It's very similar, and it's eerie, in my opinion. In something as basic as the housing crisis, the people directly affected and how local politics want to deal with the quote unquote problem. It's the same policy in Holyoke as it is in Pittsfield, unfortunately. And there's no safe place for these people to go. So no Joanna today, but I can't deprive the Weed Out of a ghoulery and tomfoolery, and I can't deprive myself. And Michael, being a longtime listener and many time guest, I believe you've mentioned you're fond of the ghoulery and tomfoolery subject, so I think it's appropriate to have you stay on. Normally we don't torture our guests.
Yeah, I'm ready. I specifically instructed Spencer here not to tell me beforehand what it's about, so I would get a fresh hot take on this horrible whatever is coming.
And we are keeping it local, baby. But we're going state level. This affects everybody in the state. Anybody listening in the Massachusetts area, we know these people as stateies. They are the bane of our existence. They cost a lot of money and they do stupid shit. Most famously in the last decade, they have been found to systemically be fraudulently obtaining overtime and abusing that system. And now, to last week, we have a story. I'm getting the ABC News article. Mass state troopers arrested for taking bribes to pass commercial drivers on test. U.S. Attorney's Office says two current and two former state police troopers are among six people charged in a scheme to allegedly take bribes in exchange for passing scores on commercial driving tests. So,
perfect.
My thing is, it's funny how they say two current and former. Are they former because they quit like yesterday? It doesn't really matter when they, it doesn't matter. My thing is, like, if there's six people implicated, that means there's at least 60 more. I take whatever is actually being taken and I multiply it by 10. So yeah, this is them cleaning up house a little bit, because typical police shenanigans, but got a little too overzealous. And somebody was going to squeal. So they charge these upstanding public servants, and it's just as bad as it was. It was, they were being bribed to push people through. And, you know, if I know anything about capitalism and corporations, this wasn't just people desperate to get their CDL. They were probably a scheme from recruiters or something. I'm pulling this out of my ass, but something like this doesn't happen so widespread just because everybody's like word of mouth. They probably was a shortage of truckers May 2019 to January 2023. Who died a lot during the pandemic? The people going state to state, truckers. So, like, truckers and cops had some of the highest rates of death from COVID, Michael.
True.
So they need more drivers. Boom. They're pushing people through, giving them licenses when they're not earning them, or passing a test. So, but there was allegedly bribes like snow drovers, snow blowers, a new driveway, you know.
I would like to know how much they're being bribed, because I don't know. I drive a lot. I drive up to 2,000 miles a week here in Massachusetts, and I have some terrifying times sometimes with the 18-wheelers. I know it's a hard job with horrible margins where you have to sometimes take your speed or speed substitute just to make the deadlines, but I'm still am terrified when they start weaving, and when they I feel like confident that I'm about to die sometimes when I'm near one of these guys. And I just wonder, how much were they charging for this, and how many people did they pass fraudulently?
Society built on cars, which are really dangerous. They're just really fucking dangerous. And
yeah,
we take for granted how dangerous it is. So I just think it's a reflection of our, of where society is in a way, but it's just so stark because it is life and death. And that I've said it before in the show, like, this is where I think road rage comes in a lot. I think because it is an actual life or death experience, like, I kind of understand people with road rage, at least like chemically. It makes sense. It's like if someone's recklessness almost gets you killed, or gets you to think you almost died or could have died, of course you're going to be fucking red, right?
Yeah.
Because that's true. Is it unreasonable? Yeah, because shit happens. We're all accepting that when we get in a car, but the reality is you could have died. So not like this is how I've rationalized being something that you never drove for a living in the last 10 years, do it a lot. I have a new relationship with driving, not to speak over your experience. And 18 wheelers, I don't know. I think there's just a lot of inexperienced drivers out there. And yeah, the forging licenses probably don't help.
Yeah, the turnover rate's already high enough without this. But what I really want to know, I'm just picturing the guy that you just showed a picture of. I'm just picturing, I'm trying to see the first time he did it, where maybe he sells it like he's doing the guy a favor. He's like, look, you almost passed. You almost passed, bud. And I just, how do you sell a bribe? That's illegal. You can get your career fucked by offering a bribe. And I would love to know the delicacy of this ham-fisted, thumb-headed man that I'm looking at the picture of. Like, how did he first offer that first bribe as if he's doing a guy a favor? And then the amazing industriousness of creating a whole scam out of it so that it's like a mechanized thing you could repeat. They've institutionalized the scam, so they know how to do it. They can train their other cops to get in on it. That's the kind of reporting that I want to see on this. Not just that it happened and that one or two guys is in trouble, but I want to see the whole Martin Scorsese Goodfellas treatment of this. Like, how did they get it going? I'm so interested.
Well, my opinion is, I've worked lots of jobs where people do things, whether it's scam the clock, there's lots of ways you can, I guess it's technically stealing, right? Accepting a bribe. Hey, give me a shot and I'll give you an illicit substance that you don't have, but you want. So you're not paying for, you win. You're giving away the liquor that's not yours. So I think it's kind of like, how does that happen? I think that's kind of my thing. But it does go to show you the state troopers, they are organized, man. They love doing organized schemes.
Yeah.
And maybe we should be more afraid of them because of how organized they are.
Oh, they terrify me, actually, believe it or not.
They do and they don't for me. I think at the end of the day, I feel comfortable knowing there's more of us. Just rational, reasonable people who aren't going to necessarily fight, but aren't going to tolerate shit, I don't need everybody to be up in arms and raising pitchforks. I just need people being able to look somebody in the eye and saying that's not acceptable. Like, if we enough of us do that, you don't even have to be violent, because the implication, of course, it's the implication of violence.
I just love that they take, sarcastically love, that they take so much more of our budget every year, state police and local police, but that they take so much in the name of public safety, and that they do something like this that's so blatantly dangerous. Like, here is your unlicensed driver for an 18,000-pound or more machine. Just go 70. Good luck. I'm sure you'll do fine. I love how blatantly unsafe. Like, it's not even like
we're completely arguably. Regards the whole point of having a licensing system.
Yeah. It's just so blatantly like, don't worry about it.
And one of the arguments about paying public officials well is so you reduce their penchant for greediness, which, yes, I think you should pay your public servants, but there should be multiple checks and balances on anything like this.
Yeah. I wish I could figure out a way to take bribes.
Bribes?
I got to stop doing everything.
You don't have anything to exchange, buddy.
Oh, my God. I need it.
You need something. Like, don't you know capitalism? You need to have capital or access that creates capital. Oh, my God. No, it's really depressing. It's like if I was doing my Scorsese version of this, if I were to guess, I'm sure it was some CDL school, some pop-up CDL school that was former cops.
Oh,
yeah,
perfect.
Kind of like how all the gun classes, like the gun safety courses, are always ex-cops or guys trained law enforcement. And it's like, what is this money laundering scheme you guys have going on over here? You guys just make up your own industry. It's fantastic. It's fascinating. And then it's like they've lobbied for all these laws that make you go through all these programs. And you're like, fuck. Like I said, they're fucking organized, man. So the state troopers, if you ever think like, oh, only idiots can be cops, this is where proof is maybe they're not so stupid. They're good at organizing.
It's a certain kind of intelligence for sure.
They're good at getting their bag, man. Like, I guess in our parlance of our times, isn't like getting the bag like kind of a good thing?
Yes.
But yeah, I don't have much respect for people that get the bag with a gun. So
no. Well, hey, no offense to bank robbers who basically, if you can get away with a bank or armored car heist and you haven't killed anyone, for me, you're still a folk hero. But besides that, I agree with you.
Yeah, what is that? Why do we like have why do we not get as mad about pirates, you know?
Hey,
From
oh,
capitalism.
100% respect for the Houthis.
I was just gonna say, like, you know, Han Solo is a hero, man. Like, he was stealing from fucking Imperial people. Takes balls to do that.
Very much.
They have planet killing machines. But yeah, I any modern day pirate, like, yeah, it's tough. Like, I don't know much about the Houthis, so I won't say. But I like that they haven't harmed anybody somehow. Like, how do you blockade the Red Sea and not kill anybody? That seems really interesting. Like, I can't imagine. I can't believe that's actually been the case. Meanwhile, Israel is bombing children, to put it bluntly. So,
Yeah.
as our weekly reminder, free Palestine. And you know, down with the empire, man. Because either way,
Yeah.
they're gonna skim off the top. They're gonna keep taking and keep taking, and they're gonna do it at the point of a rifle.
That's
And
right.
but there's more of us than there are of them, and I'm glad that you admitted you're terrified of them, Michael. You know, I try to put on a brave face, so I think I'll soften a little bit and say, yeah, I'm terrified of them too.
Oh, I get my heart rate goes up if they're behind me.
Oh,
But
yeah.
also, just I met them at the Big E, my first real experience with them. They're at a table and it says, "Meet your public servants, meet your state police, ask us anything." And so I went up to their table. I said, "The one thing I'm curious about is if you've got everything computerized. So when you pull us over and you're looking us up, why does it take so long for you to then come to the car? What are you making us sit there for so long?" And then suddenly, within the second of me asking that question, I was surrounded in a semicircle by seven state troopers, all asking me different variations of like, "Why do you have something we should know about? You got something you should hide? What are you worried about getting pulled over for?" And I was like, this was at the Big E at a family friendly event where they welcomed questions. That was their response.
Yikes. Yeah,
Yeah.
I mean, we see how like, you know, New York, not to go too much of a tangent, everybody, thank you for sticking with us, but in New York City right now, there was a fight, and two officers were trying to apprehend somebody, and they were de-arrested, essentially.
Nice.
It was a fist fight, you know. Fist fights aren't pretty. Nobody looks good in a fist fight, in my opinion. But there's a whole hoopla. Of course, this person wasn't an American citizen. I'm sure they were some sort of quote unquote illegal. But nobody's illegal, so I fucking don't even like repeating that. But you know, possibly not in accordance with US immigration laws was the individual the police were trying to apprehend in the beginning. Doesn't and they're pissed. Like, the cops got embarrassed. Like, these two cops got their ass kicked by like eight kids. Like, the kids weren't gonna take it. And you know what? Like, I don't think that was a good idea, but I don't know. There was more of you, and you were in the right. There's no need for the police to be doing what they're doing. So, yeah, do what you gotta do, I guess. I'm not gonna ever shame anybody.
That's right.
But I am worried about what is gonna happen to them.
Yeah, but that's the price of even though it's a fist fight, maybe it's criminal disobedience, but I still consider it civil disobedience. And I think it's our job when we're confronted with somebody who did something a little more radical than us, but who we basically agree with their reasoning, it's kind of our job to never denounce them and defend them anyway. It's like at least we can say like, "Hey, we wouldn't personally de-arrest somebody in a fist fight, but we get it, and here's why." So, I whoever these these kids are, I'm on their side.
It's kind of like when you describe the IRA in Ireland doing the things they did, or you know, the Hamas or any sort of freedom fighter in the Palestine struggle. And
that's right.
It's like, yeah, I don't know if I would be cool with collaborating with people that are going to bomb something that isn't a military target. I feel a little itchy about that. Like, I don't know if I would be a part of that, but I get why you guys did it. Like, I'm not, an Irish politician said this. I'm sure it's a common phrase, but the way I heard was this Irish politician at the UN saying you don't criticize the civility or the table manners of a starving person. You feed them. You don't.
That's really good.
They don't, if they get shit in the wall. So if that's what they need to do to like break out, because Gaza is a cage. It's a prison. It's a concentration camp. So, and they're bombing it. It was already.
That's right.
It was already lacking. And we have places in the United States that have similar circumstances. Flint, Michigan has bad water. They don't have good water in Gaza. These situations happen in other places too. I think that's how people rationalize it. I think like, oh, everybody's got problems. It's like, no, these problems are being forced upon them by an occupying force. So this is quite the same. It's still bad. Like, you know, the police are an occupying force. The U.S. military is an occupying force. So of course the people in Flint, Michigan are also, it's just a different way of doing it, but still bad at the end of the day, immoral, fucking unconscionable. None of this shit should happen. And, we need to be honest. So I'm not going to criticize. Yeah, I'm never going to be like, I denounce Hamas. You know, nah, man, they fucking fought back. They do. Once I learned about how, the actual fencing that the Israelis boast about, like, I'm not like getting this. I just go what the Israelis are saying, and it reads me the same shit like our cops say here. And I was like,
yes,
you guys are disgusting. This is a flex for you. This shit's horrifying.
Yeah.
This is horrifying dystopian shit what you're doing, and you're fucking proud of the cameras and the facial recognition and all this shit. That's gross.
And I guess since we're on that subject, everybody who doesn't know should know that our police train in Israel now regularly, and Israel has a big hand in Cop City in Atlanta. Like the whole training, first it was against it was developed for a military occupation, but now it's coming back home like these things almost always do.
Yeah, and a lot of, I saw an article this weekend, and I see these pop up every now and then, and I think it's its own form of propaganda to get people to feel bad for the cops, but even when they try to get people to feel bad for them, it's kind of funny. So basically, like, people are quitting the academy, like young people, presumably Gen Z, I guess, are quitting the academy or like early on in their career because they're being told it's an us versus them. They're like vermin, they're cockroaches, you know, referring to the unarmed or severely limitedly armed civilians. Like if you own a gun legally in Massachusetts, your fucking police department knows about it. You have no element of surprise on these people who have grenade launchers.
Yeah.
And they're not keeping out Canada or Mexico. They're not keeping out an army. They're keeping us in. And how people don't see that shit, it's actually like crazy making for me personally. I'm getting used to it, but I grew up in a crazy household, so I just kind of reframed like America's a toxic household just like my household was. So okay, this is starting to make a lot more sense. But but like goddamn everybody, like, and then the fact that you mentioned that they train with IDF, the Cop City thing. All the people that aren't backing down, big corporations who aren't backing down on Israel's right to defend itself concept are all the ones funding Cop City in Atlanta. And there's soon to be one being built for triple amount of money in Baltimore. I heard a plan being mentioned in Mass Politics Twitter about somebody proposing something similar in Massachusetts. I'm sure New England would get like a regional one, and that would be the compromise or some shit. This is me being dystopian and sad.
Yeah,
it's not good. They're how much money they're willing to spend on that, and again, to do what, you know, and keep us in. And as they try to criminalize homelessness, fighting homelessness becomes even more important, because I don't want to pay for somebody to be imprisoned, and I don't think they should be in prison just because they can't have a roof over their head. So to tie it all together, fuck the Mass State Police. That's my take on Guillory and tomfoolery. Fuck them, overseeing little fucking creeps. And they're organized.
Yeah.
They're scary. I appreciate Michael for sharing your thoughts. Before we wrap it up, do you have anything you want to share? Do you want to have any final thought on Guillory and tomfoolery and anything else you want to just make sure the audience knows that you're what you're thinking?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, just please be sure to check out our Facebook or our website. And just when you see the cops, ask yourself, who are they fighting and why? And look at the economics behind it. Is we can't directly oppose the cops, perhaps, but there's no reason we can't whittle them down by taking over functions from them that shouldn't be done by just an armed meathead. It should be done by a member of the community. So, like, homeless outreach, mental illness outreach, and traffic control are three obvious things that any town could try to take back from the police. And you can see that Amherst and because I have a fever, I forgot where MIT is. What's that rich Boston?
Somerville, Cambridge.
Thank you. Oh my God. Yeah, this is the wages of having a sickness. So you can see in Amherst and Somerville some examples of people trying a different route of taking away these functions from police and putting them back in the hands of us. And that's a really great strategy for recruiting people who are on the fence, who are still scared of crime and homeless people and stuff. You take away the police bit by bit. So that's my final thoughts on that, so that I don't just leave with a fuck the state police, but leave with a tiny bit of hope of like, how can we fuck them?
Yeah, I personally love constructive options, like you just mentioned. I also think there's cathartic relief. You can yell about
options,
but you can also listen to somebody if they, be a safe space for somebody. A lot of people feel uncomfortable talking. It's a fucking hot button issue. So if somebody kind of like looks like they need to talk about something, and maybe it's something like the police, or maybe, just make sure you check in with people you care about and give them a safe space to let them rant and vent. And I'm thankful for all the people in my life that let me say what I need to say to get it off my chest about greater systems. And some things you just, are scary to share because the world doesn't like when you say radical things like feed the homeless for some reason. Not the world, but the powers that be. They killed Jesus for the same fucking thing. So if you're afraid because they'll kill you for like saying something obvious, you're probably on the right track. Jesus was on the right track, right? I'm not Christian. I try to.
Yeah.
Anybody that was raised in the Judeo-Christian society like I did, he got killed for simply being like, fuck your profiteering, fuck the armed goons, and what are we doing here? Like, can't we just eat and get along? And we can do it, and I think it's possible. But yeah, the police are, I say fuck the police just because, they don't like it when you say it to them. They don't like
they it. They hate it.
They really don't like it. They feel like stepdad you never wanted, but he wanted to like make a good impression with wife number three, and he took it, took it out on you, the citizen. So anyways, that's it for this week. Thank you, Michael, from Joanna and I and everybody at the Weed Out for coming on, sharing your story, and look forward to having you on some other time. And remember, take care of your neighbors and keep weeding out the bullshit. I'm Spencer Fox Peterson, and that's all we got this week. Thanks.